Good morning. You know, I think you get to know a lot about people by the kind of treasures that they keep in their home. So I thought I'd show you a treasure from my home. This is my family's antique piano. It's been in my family for a couple generations now, and I'm not quite sure that we'd call it a treasure, but maybe one of those things that you can't get rid of, and so you just gotta find a place for. My family, we used to live in Missouri, and Missouri is part of the Midwestern United States that's known as Tornado Alley. Everyone knows that when the tornado sirens go off, you're supposed to go into your basement, into a room with no windows, and duck and cover until you get the all clear. This piano that we have is about the heaviest thing we've got in our entire house. No tornado is taking that thing out. And so we parked it in front of our downstairs linen closet, and we made that our tornado shelter. Well, being in a tornado might sound pretty scary. I never panicked when the sirens went off because I had the piano. When the storms of life come, what is your piano? Where do you run to when you lose your job and your finances start to get too low? Where do you turn when relationships start to fall apart? How do you find peace when you're watching your loved one slip away in a hospital bed? We so often look for peace in all the wrong places, and every time we do that, we end up disappointed, discouraged, and anxious. In just a moment, we're going to take a look at the story of Gideon. And Gideon gives God a name that no one else in all of Scripture does. Yahweh Shalom, the Lord, is peace. And Gideon's going to show us all the wrong places to look for peace. But he also points us to how to have true and lasting peace. And just like Gideon, we look for peace in all the wrong places, but we find ultimate peace in Jesus. So turn with me to Judges chapter 6. When we meet Gideon, he is also hiding. He's not hiding from a literal storm, but he is in a storm of life. For 7 years now, Gideon and all of Israel have been under the cruelty of the Midianites. The Midianites have come in, they've destroyed their crops, killed all of their livestock. The people are starving. They're hiding in caves in any safe place that they can find. They're crying out to God, but they don't really know him. And at this point, it's been about 7 generations, actually, since God delivered his people out of Egypt. Those first few generations got to see all these amazing miracles. They watched as God parted the Red Sea and brought manna in the wilderness and brought down the walls of Jericho. But after they conquered the promised land, something happened. And Judges 2:10 tells us that after that generation died, another generation grew up who did not acknowledge the Lord or remember the mighty things he had done for Israel. Gideon's great, great, great grandparents failed to lead their children to know and love God. And on top of that, they left them in a land surrounded by people who wanted to kill them. So without peace in the land and without knowledge of God, the Israelites start to look for peace in other places. They marry the people around them and start to worship their idols, and soon we find that Israel is trapped in this cycle of sin and idolatry and violence. And so by the time we get to Gideon, Israel is an absolute mess. They don't know God, and they think that he has abandoned them. But God hasn't abandoned Israel. God actually sent Israel a prophet to tell them exactly what they needed to do to have peace in the land. But Israel is so caught up in their cycle of chaos and violence that they don't even notice the prophet has come, and they don't listen to what he has to say. But thankfully, God is gracious, and God comes to give Israel another chance. And so he meets with Gideon. And we meet Gideon in verse 11. This is what it says. Then the angel of the Lord came and sat beneath the great tree at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash of the clan of Abiezer. Gideon, son of Joash, was threshing wheat at the bottom of a wine press to hide the grain from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "Mighty hero, the Lord is with you." The first thing we learn about Gideon is that he's trying to find peace by hiding. Gideon is threshing wheat in a wine press, which is essentially a hole in the ground. Here's the issue with that. When you thresh wheat, the first thing you do is beat it, so you loosen all the kernels. And then you take that all together and you toss it in the air. The idea is that the wind will blow away the chaff That's all the stuff that you don't want. And you'll just be left with the kernels. So you can mill that and turn it into flour and use that for baking. But typically you do this on a hill where there's lots and lots of wind. You know, there's not a lot of wind or any wind in a hole in the ground. And so Gideon is standing in this hole, throwing this wheat up and down and up and down, but he's not doing anything. And on top of that, we learn that the angel of the Lord is standing under this tree watching Gideon. And a lot of scholars would say that the angel of the Lord is a pre-incarnate Jesus. In fancy terms, we call this a theophany, which really just means that God himself has come down in a physical form to talk with his people. So you can think of it as God himself is standing under this tree, watching Gideon throw this wheat up and down and up and down, doing nothing. And it does make me wonder, when I do all of the silly and ridiculous things I do in my own life, is God standing nearby, just watching me? And we can read this scene and we can see all the comedy in it, but the truth is that we do the exact same thing. When the storms of life come, what do? We hide, we avoid them. When you don't want to deal with that one coworker at work, you kind of structure your day around how you can have the least amount of interaction with them. Or maybe you don't want to call that one family member, so you add things to your day and you make yourself really busy so you always have an excuse when they call. Or maybe you don't want to deal with the bills that have been stacking up on your kitchen counter, and so you turn to distractions. You turn to your phone or to social media or to TV or to food or to alcohol or to the gym. You turn to anything that will bring you pleasure and make you forget about the storm. And Gideon, he is constantly anxious and fearful. It impacts every area of his life. But when God comes to him, he calls him mighty hero. And you're thinking, Gideon is no mighty hero. He's over here cowering in this hole. But God sees something in Gideon that Gideon doesn't see. He sees who Gideon will be. God is calling out a new identity in Gideon. He has a new purpose, a new mission for him. And this is what we're going to see in the story of Gideon, that every time Gideon runs to a false place of peace, God is faithful. And so when Gideon tries to find peace by hiding, God is faithful. But as the story goes on, we're going to recognize two things. One, Gideon is not quite ready to accept God's faithfulness. And two, Gideon actually has no idea who he is speaking with. He does think that this is a random man in the field. And so he says to this man, "Sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? And where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about? Didn't they say the Lord brought us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites." Secondly, we find that Gideon is trying to find peace by blaming others. He's blaming God for the Midianites coming in. He's blaming God for the idolatry and for every wrong thing that has been happening in Israel. And we do the same thing. Sometimes we blame others because we're trying to protect our own sense of perfection and superiority. When things go wrong at our home or in our schools or at work, if we can blame someone else, then we don't have to admit that it might have been our mistake, and we protect our own sense of superiority. But other times, we blame others because we have a really hard time accepting that sometimes bad things happen simply because we live in a broken and a sinful world. We desperately need a reason. We need someone to blame. And so when a terrible accident happens, or a loved one gets sick, or this project that you've been working on for years and years suddenly falls to pieces, we have to have someone to blame. What I love about God's response to Gideon is that he doesn't even dignify this blame game with a defense. Instead, he just gives instructions. He says to Gideon, "Go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I am sending you." Gideon and all of Israel, they want this comfortable life, like we all do, right? But they don't want to make the sacrifices that they have to make to have that comfortable life. God has told them that if you want to have peace in the land, you need to get rid of the idols. But Israel, they don't want to be rid of the idols. They just want to be rid of the Midianites. They want God's power, but they don't think that they need his presence. And so the third place that Gideon turns to for peace is to idols. An idol is anything that we replace God for. They're things we look for peace, for security, and for fulfillment. For some of you, that might be a new car or your house, maybe a relationship, maybe it's your finances, maybe it's a body, maybe it's your own body. For others of you, it might be a person. When I was in university, I was responsible for overseeing and mentoring a hall of about 20 girls. And a common issue that would come up is they were constantly trying to find their peace in another person, in a friend or a boyfriend or a teacher or a professor or even their coach. And they would always come back disappointed. And what we would end up talking about is that there's a difference between experiencing God's peace through a person and turning that person into the source of your peace. Because when you suddenly can't have peace apart from that person, that's not true peace. That's codependency, and that is the enemy trying to take what should be a good and a beautiful relationship and twist it into an instrument of destruction in your life, because that's what idols do. And the truth is that there is only one person in whom we find true and lasting peace, and that person is Jesus. But Gideon still struggles to accept this, and so now he says to God, God, but Lord, how can I rescue Israel? My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh, and I am the least in my entire family. Now Gideon is trying to find peace in his family and in his reputation. But here's what God says. The Lord said to him, I will be with you, and you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man. How often do we need someone to say something like this to us? We get so caught up in our negative self-talk, we say, I'm not the right person for this because I don't speak well, or this isn't my gifting, this isn't the right timing, there's someone better who could do this, and we go on and on and on, and we do this because we're trying to protect our own reputation. We think, if I do this and I fail, people are going to think I'm incompetent. Or if I talk like that in front of my coworkers, they won't respect me anymore. If I take this path instead of this one, my friends might reject me. We fear failure, we fear rejection, and we desperately need someone to come and speak God's truth against the lies of the enemy that we are believing. And this is me a couple months ago when Daniel asked me to speak. I told him no. I said, no, Daniel, this is not my gifting. I don't have experience in this. There's better people you could ask, and I just really don't want to. And what I needed in that moment were people in my life to speak God's truth over and against the lies of the enemy that I was believing. And this is what God does for Gideon. Every time Gideon comes over here and thinks he can find peace in another place, God says, no, Gideon, your peace is in me. But Gideon's still struggling, and so he says to God, if you are truly going to help me, show me a sign to prove that it is really the Lord speaking to me. Don't go away until I come back and I bring my offering to you. And he answered, I will stay here until you return. So Gideon still really doesn't know who he's talking to. He's recognizing that this is a man from God, but he's not quite sure if he can trust him, and so he asks for a sign. And the last place we see Gideon turn to for peace is to signs. And you know, some people, they look for signs in like tarot cards or in their horoscope. And you might be thinking, well, of course, I don't do that. But we look for peace in other ways, don't we? We say to God, God, if somebody explicitly asks me to serve in this ministry today, then I'll serve there. When you've already been feeling that nudge that God has been telling you to serve there. Or we say to God, God, if you just work A, B, and C out in my finances, then I'll start tithing, when God has already asked you to take that step of faith. Or maybe you say, God, if you give me this very specific sign, then I'll break up with this person, when you know you're not supposed to be with them. But we love our comfort, and so we constantly try to find our peace in signs rather than in the truth that God is already speaking to us. And this is what Gideon does. And what he does is no different from all the nations around Israel were doing. They would kill an animal, and they would watch how its intestines spilled out, and they would read signs from the intestines. And we look at that, and we're like, that's gross and weird. But that's exactly what we do when we try to find our peace in signs instead of the truth that God is already speaking to us through his voice, through his word and through the wise counsel of others. And so Gideon looks for peace in hiding, in blaming, in idols, in his reputation, and in signs. What I love about the story of Gideon is that every time Gideon comes over here and thinks he can find peace here, God is patient and he is faithful. God, he doesn't yell at Gideon. He doesn't shake him and scream, "Gideon, why can't you get this?" He doesn't strike Gideon down dead in that field. He doesn't abandon Gideon for complaining too much. When Gideon rejects God for all of these false places of peace, God is faithful. And so let me ask you, if you're here today and you're feeling like you don't have peace, is there something false that you're putting your peace in? Because we will never experience true and lasting peace if we're constantly deluded into thinking that our peace is in something else. In these false places, they work for a time, don't they? We don't feel so anxious when we're scrolling on social media. We feel a little bit better about our problems, and we can blame someone else for them. We can go to the gym and work on our bodies and have control of that when the rest of our life feels so out of control. But at the end of the day, we're still anxious. We still don't have peace. And the amazing thing is that God stayed with Gideon. God championed Gideon. God called out a new identity in him, and he called him to something great. And what we're going to see is more than Yahweh Shalom just showing us his faithfulness. Yahweh Shalom makes the greatest promise to us, the promise of his presence. And look how many times in just those few verses that we read that God promises his presence. In verse 12, he says to Gideon, "The Lord is with you." In verse 14, he says, "I am sending you," which is really, "Gideon, I am sending you with the full force of my presence." In verse 16, he says, "I will be with you." And then he follows that up with, "And you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man." How can Gideon destroy this huge and powerful army like he's fighting against one man? Because it's not his power. It is the full power of the full presence of God working in and through and behind him. God is saying to Gideon, "Gideon, I am with you. I am fighting for you. My presence is enough." And now, in verse 18, he says to Gideon, "I will stay." Because not only is God promising his future presence to Gideon, he is present with Gideon in that field in the midst of Gideon's storm of life. Right at that moment. And there's another time that Jesus promises his presence like this. It's when he's sitting in the upper room, having the Last Supper with his disciples, and he tells them that he's going to go away for a time, but he's sending them his helper, his Holy Spirit. And he says this, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." Jesus is telling them, "I might not be physically present with you in that moment, but I'm sending you my spirit." He says, "You have my peace because you have the full force of my presence working in and through and behind you." And just as Jesus promised that presence to his disciples, he promised that same presence to Gideon. But Gideon's still wrestling. He's still not quite there. And so he's starting to recognize that this is a man from God, but he's still not sure if he can trust him, but he thinks he should make an offering. And so Gideon, in all of his great wisdom, leaves the angel of the Lord, leaves God himself standing in the middle of the field, and he runs off to go cook him dinner. And Gideon makes boiled meat and broth and unleavened bread, which is essentially soup and crackers. And then he brings these soup and crackers back to God to make an offering. And God turns this meal into an offering. Here's what he says. The angel of God said to him, "Place the meat and unleavened bread on this rock and pour the broth over it." And Gideon did as he was told. Then the angel of the Lord touched the meat and bread with the tip of the staff in his hand, and fire flamed up from the rock and consumed all he had brought. And the angel of the Lord disappeared. When Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he cried out, "O sovereign Lord, I'm doomed. I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." "And it's all right," the Lord replied. "Do not be afraid, you will not die." And Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and named it Yahweh Shalom, which means "The Lord is peace." And the altar remains at Ophrah in the land of the clan of Abiezer to this day. So the angel of the Lord turns this meal into a sacrifice. He tells Gideon to put it on this rock, and then he touches it with his staff, fire flames up, and he disappears. And Gideon is standing here, and it finally clicks. Oh, this was the angel of the Lord that I was speaking with. This was God himself. And now Gideon is terrified. But God speaks to him out of heaven, and he reassures him. And so in response, Gideon builds this altar, and he names it Yahweh Shalom, the Lord is peace. Now, why does Gideon name it the Lord is peace? Why doesn't he call it the Lord is holy, or the Lord is mighty, or the Lord is with me? Why does he say the Lord is peace? In this moment, Gideon truly believes that he is going to die. In Exodus 33:20, we read that God tells Moses, "But you may not look directly at my face, for no one may see me and live." The Israelites believed that you could not see God and live. But Gideon is standing here thinking, "I just met with God. I talked with him in this field. He was right there. And all I gave him were soup and crackers, and now I am going to die." But God speaks to him, and he says, "It's all right. Do not be afraid. You will not die." And in Hebrew, what God actually says here is shalom. He says, "Shalom, Gideon, peace to you, Gideon." And Gideon has anything but peace. He's got these pesky Midianites who are trying to kill him. He's surrounded by all these pagan altars. He's lost in his identity, and now God has called him to lead an army into battle. He has anything but peace. But God speaks to him, peace. And his biggest concern for Gideon is really that he's seen the glory of God and he is going to die. And so Gideon recognizes that exactly who he needs in that moment is the Lord of peace. And this is actually the only time this name is used for God in all of Scripture. Gideon, who knew no peace, not in his home, not in his community, and not on his land, he met God in a field and he experienced the presence of God, and he called him Yahweh Shalom, the Lord is peace. Have you experienced God's presence like that? Do you believe that in the midst of your storms of life, God sees you? Do you believe that he is championing you? He is calling out a new identity in you, and he is calling you to something great. And this seems like the great climactic end to our story, right? That God has come down to meet with Gideon. He watched Gideon make all these mistakes, but then he did a miracle, and now Gideon understands everything, right? And everything's fixed. But it's not, because real life's not like that. And for Gideon, the Midianites are still attacking Israel, and Israel is still trapped in idolatry. Gideon is still the least in his family, and his family is still the least in his tribe. Gideon is still foolish, still fearful, still trapped in the storm of life. And earlier, I told you about some of the tornadoes that so often come through Missouri. And the thing about tornadoes is just because you're safe inside a tornado shelter doesn't mean that you're safe from all the impacts of a tornado. Tornadoes still come through. They still tear out trees from the ground and take out power lines. They still level houses and throw cars hundreds of meters away. And what you need most after a tornado is a disaster response team. You need people who are going to come in and search for those who are trapped in their houses or lost or injured. You need people who are going to come and clear out the debris so that other people can come in and start rebuilding. And there are many of you here today who are feeling the impacts of storms in your own life. And you're saying, "I know that God is my peace. I know that he's the place that I should be running to in these storms, but I don't feel his peace." And so often I think this happens because we misunderstand God's peace. We think that God's peace always equals comfort. We think that if we have God's peace, that nothing bad will ever happen. We'll never grieve. We'll never be anxious. We'll never have financial troubles. There's never going to be conflict in our families or conflict in our workplaces. We think that God's peace is always comfort. And if we're constantly searching for comfort, we're never going to find peace. And this is Gideon's lifelong problem. Gideon knows with his head, and he says with his mouth, Yahweh Shalom, the Lord is peace. But he really struggles to get there in his heart. And to his credit, Gideon does the things that God asks him to do, but he constantly falls back on asking for signs and seeking God's power more than God's presence. In the next couple chapters, Gideon goes on to fight the Midianites. But the first thing he does is ask God for another sign. He sets up this test with some fleece in the morning dew, and Gideon knows he's not supposed to ask for a sign. God has told him he's not supposed to ask for a sign. But God is gracious, and he gives Gideon this sign not once, but twice. And then he says, Gideon, it's time to go. So Gideon goes on to battle. But then we find that Gideon is trying to find his peace in the size of his army. Gideon has 22,000 soldiers. And God says, Gideon, that's too big. And so he takes this army of 22,000 and he brings it down to 10,000. And then he says, that's still too big. And so he takes this army of 10,000 and he brings it down to 300. And Gideon defeats the Midianites with only 300 men. Gideon has to watch as God chips away at all of the things that he was putting his trust and identity in. And when that's gone, he has no choice but to trust in Yahweh Shalom, in his presence, in his truth, and in the restoring work that he is doing. And I wouldn't be surprised if God is chipping away at some of the things in your life that you've been putting your peace in. And you've been saying, God, this is doing the opposite of bringing me peace. This is adding more confusion and more chaos to my life. But perhaps this chipping away is exactly what God is calling you to embrace, because he is giving you a new identity, a new purpose, a new mission. He is calling you to something great, just like he's doing for Gideon. And this is why a lack of peace is ultimately a problem in our own hearts. We look to all the problems around us and we blame them for our lack of peace, but that's not the truth. And in the story of Gideon, God works to bring ultimate peace, ultimate shalom to Gideon's heart. And in our lives, God works to bring ultimate restoration, ultimate peace to our hearts, not only so that we have peace with God, but also so that we can go out and be peacemakers. And peace is an ongoing relationship with the presence of God. God's peace does not always end the storm. There's still conflict in our families. There's still conflict in our workplaces. We still have financial crises. We still get anxious. We still grieve. We're still fearful at times. God's peace does not always end the storm. What God's peace does do is strengthen and equip us in the midst of it. Because there is a true and better Gideon who did not just deliver his people from the Midianites, but delivered them from sin and death. And Jesus hung on the cross for 6 hours and experienced the worst storm of being eternally separated from God. Isaiah 9:6 calls Jesus the Prince of Peace. And the Prince of Peace doesn't just offer peace, he offers himself. Our hope in Jesus is that one day we will experience ultimate shalom, ultimate peace, ultimate fulfillment, ultimate completeness, ultimate wholeness in a restored relationship with God. But in the meantime, God is constantly working in our hearts so that we can accept more and more of the peace that he is already offering us. And God's peace is not just for us. As God equips us, as God works in our hearts, he also equips us to join his own disaster response team. And Paul talks about this a little bit in Ephesians 6 when he talks about the armor of God. In verse 15, he says, for shoes, put on the peace that come from the good news so that you will be fully prepared. And I think it's so interesting that Paul talks about peace as shoes, because we think of peace as something that we lay back and we experience. But the Bible speaks of peace as a mission. Shalom in the Bible is so much more than just an inner stillness. Shalom refers to wholeness and completeness, not just in individuals, but also in community. And so that's why in 2 Corinthians 5:18 to 19, Paul tells us, "And God has given us this task of reconciling people to him. For God was in Christ, reconciling the world to himself, no longer counting people's sins against them. And he gave us this wonderful message of reconciliation." Paul goes on to call us Christ's ambassadors. And as Christ's ambassadors, we are called to join God's disaster response team for the world. Because the funny, living in God's peace means that we're living on God's disaster response team. Because as much as God's peace is for you, it's also for your neighbor. And Jesus did not go to the cross so that you could sit comfortably on your couch in your slippers. He went to the cross so that all people might know him, believe in him, and experience life with him forever. God is on a mission to bring peace to the whole world, and the shoes of peace are not some comfy slippers that you slide on. They are some heavy-duty work boots that we're called to strap on and join God's mission of disaster response for the whole world. We're going to the broken and storm-beaten places that desperately need God's peace. And the funny thing about knowing God's peace is that you start to recognize the areas where peace is missing. And God gives you this holy unrest. And this holy unrest doesn't mean that you don't have God's peace. You do have God's peace. But you also have this nagging sense that peace is missing somewhere, and you are called to go and fix it. And I'm so inspired by the people in our church who see these places, and they go there. I think about our master's pantry, and our Toronto Alliance Church outreach, and our Peru missions team who just came back this week. They see the broken places in the world, and they feel this nagging sense, this holy unrest that they are called to go there. Because when you know the peace of Yahweh Shalom, you can't help but want to share that with everyone. And I remember the worst storm that I've ever been in. It was a tornado that happened at a Good Friday service in 2011. And the sky was this terrifyingly bright green, and the wind was so strong it was bending the trees and they were practically on the ground. So we evacuated everyone who had been worshiping in the sanctuary, and we brought them into the inner part of our church, which was our children's ministry. And in 2011, I was only 9 years old, so they gave me a cup of animal crackers and they turned on VeggieTales. But I remember hearing the adults in the next room singing. And these adults, they didn't know if they were going to walk outside later and have a car in the parking lot. They didn't know if they were going to go home that night to a house that was still standing. The tornado actually hit the airport where everyone's loved ones were coming in to celebrate Easter with them. But as they stood in that elementary room, in the midst of all of that fear, in all of that uncertainty, they sang Amazing Grace. And after the storm was over, they didn't rush back to their cars and their houses like you might expect. Instead, we all came back to the sanctuary, and we took communion, and we worshiped Yahweh Shalom, Jesus, the Prince of Peace, who on Good Friday faced the full storm of the cross, the full force of hell, so that you would never have to experience a storm of life alone. And Yahweh Shalom, he is with you. And he is inviting you to experience his peace. And in just a moment, the worship team is also going to lead us in singing Amazing Grace. But before they do that, let me ask you, what wrong place are you looking for peace? Where are you aware of God's presence in your life? And have you traded out your cozy slippers for some heavy-duty work boots to go out and share that peace?